You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1. Registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2. Solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
And welcome aboard to another edition of New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design in Traverse City. The crew is in today, led by Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
It is so good to be here on Thursday, July 13th, 2023. Welcome to one and all. We love doing the radio show, especially on gorgeous days like these. It always helps, doesn't it? Man, it feels like we're in the sweet spot of summer right now with the weather and all the rest.
Fresh blueberries.
Oh my!
The cherries are great this year.
Yeah. Are the raspberries ready? Because almost. That's my favorite.
And the strawberries too. We already put some in the freezer.
Yeah.
And joining us, you heard her voice, Heidi Cartwright. Good morning, Heidi. How are you, sir, ma'am, whoever you are?
That just goes with the pronoun
I know,
theme today,
exactly.
I think. Yeah, I'm great. I am really
that
glad
fits
to
right
be
in,
here.
Doesn't it?
It
that
sure
intro.
Does. I can hardly believe we're already in the middle of July. It just seems like it's flown by, but what a great summer it's been so far.
It has been.
Back to school specials around already.
Are they really?
Yeah. Oh. Well, why are they so far ahead of the times? And Deanne Jennings, too, our Director of Operations. Welcome, Deanne.
Good morning, everyone. So good to be here with you this morning.
Great to have you. Now, the information Heidi's going to be sharing is related to frequently asked questions as to Social Security. And fantastic stuff. Actually, some frequently asked questions I think you'll find of interest by Heather Schreiber there, who is affiliated with the Enslot organization. Some great info. And before we go on, Heidi is teaching a class next week.
Next Wednesday.
And honestly been surprised at the number of folks who've signed up for that class here in the middle of summer. In fact, we were talking to some clients yesterday, and they said, you know, if we were around, we'd be going to that class. Easy for them to say, I know. But anyway, I believed them because it's about...
It's the ABCs of RMDs and QCDs. So we're trying to get as many acronyms in there as possible in that title.
There you go.
Yeah.
Required minimum distributions and qualified charitable distributions in concert with that, and how to take advantage of those things and what the speed is on this and what you might possibly want to know or take advantage of. It's amazing to me. I met with a family yesterday that brought in all three of their children, and man, that was I've known them a long time. But we were talking about beneficiary planning, non-spouse beneficiary planning, and the amount of flexibility that they have from disclaiming, from, you know, choosing different beneficiaries from the QCDs and all the rest with these IRAs. It's like anything else. And when you've got the appropriate tools for those folks who use tools, whether it's in the kitchen or in the garage, it's incredible, you know, what a difference a good Sawzall makes to destroying things that don't don't you don't want anymore.
Yes.
You know, the cut up, you know, whatever, whatever it is, right? So the same thing is true with using the right tools for these financial instruments. It's amazing. And I think Heidi will do a great job at that class, and that is noon next Wednesday. If you do want to sign up, I think we still have room, do we not?
We do.
Phone number at the office, 231-947-3992. Please speak with Melissa about that. And just really, it's fun to be able to use that classroom.
That's it certainly is.
So that's at your new digs.
Yeah, that's
right. Great. Good deal.
It is so much easier for us to do rather than try to schedule through some or other organization. Mm-hmm. So classroom is there. It's going to be used, and we'll have lunch. It goes from 12 to 1 on the dot.
Right. We try to be very respectful of people's time so that they can just use their lunch hour, learn something new, and hopefully ask more questions.
You bet, in case you got to go back to work. And then Deanne's got some great info to enhance our information related to the economy. Do what few are thinking. Here we go. Today, whenever everyone goes one way, I go t'other. Is a quote from an old farmer back in England, all creatures great and small, in case you're wondering where that came from. Well, he was an incredibly successful farmer financially, and to survive and prosper in today's stock market is very helpful if you think something every day, possibly that few investors are thinking. It is a bad idea to allow your mind to continually be part of the consensus. Bob Dylan may have said it best. Going to change my way of thinking, make myself a different set of rules, going to put my good foot forward and stop being influenced by fools.
There you go.
Can't sing quite like him, but I give it a shot anyway. Good try, Dennis. It's anyway. So, second, forget the naysayers, as Barron said. Why, the market can keep climbing. This market has legs. Well, what are the stats on that? First half of 23 has been a blockbuster for the stock market, especially the technology stocks. The NASDAQ 100, which is heavily weighted by tech stocks, was up 37% for the first half of 23, which is the biggest first half gain in its history. Now, while that's interesting, it's interesting to note, as per usual, if everyone's going one way, be careful, okay? And Albert Einstein also said that in his own major scientific talent that he was watching was an ability to look at an enormous number of experiments and journal articles, select a few that were both correct and important, and ignore the rest. So the residential real estate market is absolutely fascinating. Some of the stats on that, generally the market would say it should be weak. It's not. And then second, how serious and dangerous is the enormous federal government deficit that is currently going on at an accelerated pace? So what does that mean for you? Periods of fast bank lending or large monetized fiscal deficits and thus rapid money supply growth tend to create inflationary environments. That's, you know, that's what we've all been hearing a lot about, inflation. And it appears to be coming down. The rate of change in inflation appears to be getting lower. Now, why is the rate of change important? It doesn't mean that prices are coming down. They probably never will. The rate of pace of change appears to be coming down. The problem is that central banks can only affect some of the causes of inflation. They can influence how much bank lending happens. They can print money to finance their government's fiscal deficits, or they can try to do the opposite for brief periods of time. A central bank will almost always facilitate monetization, it means lots of spending, of government deficits during a war or sovereign debt crisis. Monetization simply means that they're not financing it with new debt. They're simply printing more money. Too much money chasing too few goods tends to cause inflation and tends to cause a decline in our own dollar. So that's the real danger that we're in. Even though the federal government, Congress, all the rest could spend money almost without having to answer to anyone, well, now that they're raising rates on their own debt, all of a sudden that's going to start to impinge their ability to spend significantly. And some of you are saying, I'll believe it when I see it. Right? What many of today's interest rate hawks are missing is that raising rates increases the fiscal deficit, and the deficit has been the primary driver of inflation in this cycle rather than excessive lending. It means that it's not been driven by the private sector. The government is at fault. Well, I knew that anyway, Dennis. Now, what's interesting is the hardest inflation combination for a central bank to deal with is, and by the way, I'm quoting from several writers here. I've just kind of blown by who these people all are. This is by Mr. L. Alden. Do high interest rates fix high inflation? All right, so that's what we're referencing. So the hardest inflation combination for a central bank to deal with is, one, a high sovereign debt to GDP ratio, which is where we're getting, where we're at now, number one.
Yep.
Two, large and structural fiscal deficits tied to age demographics. That's old folks. Ron, do we know any old folks?
A few.
A
couple.
Yeah. And imbalanced entitlement programs. Social Security.
Medicare.
Defense. And high military spending, that's defense, we can call it, with no clear resolution in sight. And then three, significant supply constraints, such as tight oil markets or labor shortages. Have we experienced any of those?
Wow, it seems like we can hit a check mark on each of those.
Maybe so one, two,
three.
Or three.
So, ironically, the government is exacerbating inflation due to further widening loose those fiscal deficits. On one side is a rock, and the other is a hard place. When people say they want low inflation, what they really mean is that they want inflation fixed by more supply, which is what, supply-side economists like you and I would say. Why are they trying to control demand? Why don't we increase supply? Well, that's what the Fed's trying to control demand by increasing interest rates, but they're winding up hurting themselves significantly and our economy. High interest rates on large amounts of government debt that are greater than 100% of our economic production or GDP will result in even bigger runaway deficits because now they're dealing with ballooning interest payments on that debt.
Yep.
And this pushes more money into the economy. Now, the deficits, this in essence will threaten the power of the dollar. Now, a great article from Barron's as we move through this. With interest rates near zero, fiscal deficits could be dismissed. That's no longer the case from June 30th. It's interesting. The federal government budget deficit is forecast to total almost 6% of GDP this year, then climbing every year to 10% by 2053. Mm-hmm. Total federal debt held by the public is projected to climb from 98% of gross domestic product this year to top its historic World War II high of 107% in 2029 and to reach 181% by 2053. Such high and rising debt would slow economic growth, push up interest payments to foreign holders of U.S. debt, pose significant risk to the fiscal and economic outlook. It could also cause lawmakers to feel more constrained in their policy choices. So they are really between a rock and a hard spot, and their ability to control inflation is very suspect right now. Mm. And they are going to find it extremely difficult to control this deficit because of their own spending habits. In essence, what's not politically feasible or doable by those in Congress right now would be to cut their spending and really get that under control, which seems like so almost a libertarian kind of approach. They would cut their own spending? No, it would be extremely unlikely. But we're going to come, what this is saying is we're going to come to a time where it's going to severely impact our dollar. And those who would play defense, for instance, in purchasing. Now, there is no, before I say this, there is no panacea on what kind of an asset is going to be the best. There is never. You always have to ride out the ups and downs. But generally, gold and silver or other natural mining metals that are known as currency replacements, like gold and silver, tend to be very good hedges in these kinds of environments. What I'm saying is you may want to, given what we're seeing in this ever-rising federal deficit, you may want to hedge your bets by adding these kinds of assets over time, real assets, okay?
I was just looking at the gold market. What's it? Well, it's up, this is in 1 year, it's up a little under 4% over the last year,
price
of gold.
Just do 5 years, if you would. Can you go to 5 years? Go to all. See what we have in all.
Clicking the chart here, that is...
Yeah, there you go. Go back just 5 years. That would be, let's see, 18.
18, so right about in
here. Who would have believed it? So about $1,100 an ounce.
And it's,
and people lose track of that.
So it's $1,900 now, so almost
a significant
doubling.
Percentage, yeah. Yeah. So relatively... When you look at that graph, it's on an ever-rising index. So, obviously, it fluctuates in price, as does silver. Mm-hmm. But as a replacement for a currency, can make a ton of sense. Real estate. Normally, when the Fed's moves into an aggressive rate hike cycle, the residential real estate market suffers greatly. Such is not the case today. It's very interesting. The whole idea that prices in the aggregate are dropping is a myth. Demand is way above supply. People have good paying jobs, and there's a realization that mortgage rates are not going back below 6%. And so if you want to buy a house, you need to pull the trigger, is what this article says. If this proves correct and continues, then with housing being at 32% of the consumer price index, inflation is not declining to 2% as the Fed wants. That's another comment there, too. This is from Joel Ross, who has a very good record in the real estate, especially residential. So residential real estate, the percentages, Deanne had a fascinating one on that in terms of what was that number? Do you have that right at your fingertips there?
I thought it was
quite interesting.
Over the last 12 months, average monthly annualized sales of existing homes have been $4.46 million, the lowest level since August 2012. Mm. Supply remains the main culprit as inventories of homes listed for sale fell to 1.08 million, which is the lowest level for the month of May since at least 1999, and that source is National Association of Realtors.
24 years in terms of supply.
Shocking.
It was really a surprise because all the prognosticators have been saying, and that is true in some markets, as in any markets. We've been getting some softening. You know, we get that. But it's probably not long-lived, even with these rising interest rates. There's still a lot of competition for homes out there.
Is with the interest rates causes the number of homes sold to go down, would you say?
Generally.
Fewer
people can support or afford those payments. But we have enough people who have better paying jobs and who've saved enough where they can scoot by and still afford these homes, and they're in there doing it. It's interesting on a local market just to see how quickly things move. Mm. If, obviously, they're priced correctly. They seem to move quickly under contract in usually, a week, 10 days?
Yep.
They know this, Jack and those other folks who are actively in that market, but it's amazing how it moves on through. You betcha. For those of you who listen to us quite often, you'll be happy to know that the disclosure that we play at the beginning of the program is no longer going to be required. I guess
until the end of the program,
the compliance
play it
folks
once.
Heard us laughing at it, and I think they were kind of influenced by that. But that also shows a greater level of trust, I think, from them in terms of what we're covering here on the program. And so we'll just have one disclosure required at the end of the show. So, Heidi, frequently asked questions regarding Social Security. Some interesting stats there, too, if you would.
Yeah, so this comes to us from the Ed Slack Group, like Dennis mentioned earlier in the show. And they have this monthly newsletter. And in July, at the midpoint in the year, they usually have this entry of some of the frequently asked questions that they get. And, you know, they note that there is never a shortage of Social Security and Medicare topics that cause confusion among consumers. And I definitely would agree with that statement, because we get a lot of questions, Dennis and I do, during our meetings regarding these two topics. And sometimes the rules don't make sense, and sometimes there's a lot of rules on one topic. So that adds to that confusion. So let's jump right in. So the first question is, with insolvency issues continuing to be front page news, what is the probability of Social Security benefits moving towards a mean-tested program? That would be a major shift from the current approach, which is based on the earnings of the beneficiary and the number of work years. So they note in this article that such a revision is unlikely, because the program is funded by the earnings of the workers who pay into the system and who expect at some point in the future to collect a benefit in return for those payments. But the not-so-obvious point is that Social Security benefits are already means-tested. In reality, lower wage earners now receive a much higher income replacement percentage than the higher wage earners. The first dollars of pre-retirement earnings are replaced at 90% in the benefit computation formula.
All right. Now, we talked about this when we were talking about the material on this Monday.
That's right.
And what I said was, this is the first time you've heard it here, folks. I've heard or seen a cogent explanation of actually what those related benefits are. So, you know, you always know intuitively, well, you know, if you do make less, you're going to get more of your income covered by Social Security, a greater percentage. And there it is right there. Could you state that percentage again, please?
The first dollars of pre-retirement earnings are replaced at 90% in the benefit computation formula. As earnings rise, they are replaced at 32% and eventually as low as 15%.
So there you have it.
What does that mean?
That means if you're making 300 grand in a given year, you're not going to have nearly as much of your income replaced by Social Security. They couldn't do it financially. So, in essence, they're paying a lot more in. They're not paying. I always think of Bob listening. Did Dennis get that right? Thank you, Bob. we do have accountability here, believe it or not. Even though he's not here, he's in my mind. So, what that's saying is, how much of Social Security, how much of income is taxed by Social Security? I think it's about 160,000 right now. I'm going to ask a question that's not really answerable because we don't have the number, but a significantly greater portion. So let's just say your income is $160,000. All of your income pretty much is going to be taxed for Social Security benefits. But if you go on up, if you're someone at, let's say, at $50,000, you're not obviously paying nearly as much in, but you're going to get much more paid back to you as a percentage of your pre-retirement income. You might, for instance, get $3,000 a month versus someone who's making much more. They might get $3,500 a month. Does that help?
So it is kind of means tested then.
It is already.
So what they're really saying is those with higher lifetime earnings and therefore more Social Security taxes paid receive less in benefits per taxes paid than lower earnings.
See, I should just let you explain it. You did that much better. I knew that was coming. See, there you are. So,
well, it sort of sums it up.
Well, it does, indeed.
Yeah. All right, so we move on to the next question. It's, should the higher cost of living adjustments, known as COLAs, of recent years resulting from rising inflation factor into my decision to perhaps claim earlier than originally planned?
Now, this is a common question. Well, you know, if I was retired, I'd get that COLA. Well, you get it regardless of whether or not you're retired.
Ah.
But the real thing is, would I be better off starting benefits and receiving that higher COLA versus waiting to earn a higher benefit? And the answer is, would you be better off? Probably not. COLAs will be applied to your benefit beginning at age 62, regardless of when you start. If you claim the benefit early, COLAs are then applied to the locked-in smaller benefit each year. So by waiting and allowing the Social Security benefit to grow, COLAs will be applied to the real benefit that is larger, delivering a greater inflation protection over time.
Well, it's delivering a greater dollar benefit. The greater inflation protection is simply because it's greater dollars. It's mm-hmm. the same percentage applied.
Correct.
It's just a larger dollar amount.
Right.
More money is always better, right, Ron?
Yes.
I mean, really.
More money.
That's how we all usually think of things, right?
Yes.
More money is better. All right. The next question. Is there any reason to file and suspend benefits at full retirement age rather than just waiting until age 70 to file? And the answer is no. Simply delaying your claim beyond your full retirement age will produce the same result. So if you file and suspend, it's the same as just waiting until that future age to take it. This really what they're trying to get at is a loophole that has been closed. The option to file and suspend and have your spouse go ahead and take a benefit based on your earnings is no longer permitted. That law went through in 2016, and those people turn age 70 on and before January 1st of 2024. So that option of file and suspend, if you have friends and you're talking to them and they're like, oh, we did this, that is really just going away, and that's not an option that is available anymore.
Mm-hmm. So some of those games that were played that were common, or I know I've heard about that. It's not available, all right? Some of them are not. They closed many of those loopholes.
Yes. So the last question we were going to look at today is, I plan to file for early retirement benefits at age 62 while continuing to work part-time, yet staying below the earnings limit. Will my spouse's earnings have any impact on my early claim? I get this question a lot, like from one individual of a couple, and they want to know if they take that early, where that earnings limit. Is it our joint income or our just my income? And the annual earnings test applies to individuals, not married couples.
Okay.
So you don't have to take what your spouse is making into consideration when making that. And that's a pretty common question, wouldn't you think, Dennis?
You bet. And it's a common thinking, too. Well, wouldn't it be based on our joint income? No, it's just based on the individual's income that is attempting to collect Social Security or thinking of it at that time.
And something people might want to keep in mind is that the limit becomes more generous in that year that you turn your full retirement age. So if you're you turn your full retirement age at the end of the year and you want to turn and you're still working, you want to turn on benefits, you have a higher earnings test in that situation.
A common refrain, rather, from those who are already retired. A recent Wall Street Journal article 2 days ago, perhaps, was that many said they regretted having taken Social Security too early. They wished they would have waited longer because of the increase in benefits and their life expectancy. All of a sudden, you know, their horizon changes. As they age, they realize, you know, 80 is not so old anymore.
Oh.
We've had several folks tell us that.
Mm.
And I don't feel so old now at 80, as it were, okay?
All right.
I have a question on the text line.
You bet.
Please explain why we don't hear more about bonds and bond funds as specific investment tools with higher interest rates.
Well, that is a great question. And as per usual, it seems our audience is one step ahead of us, but that was one of the conversations we were going to have with Deanne Stats.
Uh-huh.
So I think, and that is a great point, why wouldn't I be interested in bond funds? Well, they were terrible last year. Will they be good this year? Chances are much better because interest rates have come up so much. So as a relative investment right now, frankly, being specific about it, Treasury inflation protection securities are still a relatively good value. Tips.
And we did on the show a couple weeks ago, we talked about the difference between treasury bills and treasury bonds and treasury notes. And treasury bills as well have gained a lot of popularity and interest because of those rising interest rates.
No pun intended, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those rates are over 5% for short-term money at this point. Over 5%? I mean, it's just shocking.
Shocking.
All right.
It is.
So Deanne's got some great stats to bolster what we've been talking about, Deanne.
Absolutely. Retirees are investing more like young adults. Instead of shifting more to bonds, nearly half of Vanguard's active 401k investors over the age of 55 held more than 70% stocks, up from just 38% in 2011. And that source is Sherwood.
And then interesting, when all, the, as we were quoting at the beginning of the show, when all everyone's going one way, you may want to consider more bonds, given their relative value and given that question we just had. It's a very good point.
Absolutely. Individual investor bullish sentiment exceeded 40% in the week ended June 21st, 2023, for the third week in a row. The last time bullish sentiment exceeded 40% for three or more weeks was in July 2021. Even with the elevated sentiment, bullish sentiment has not cracked above 50% of the 113 consecutive weeks. And that source is American Association of Individual Investors.
It's a couple of years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Relatively good sign still.
It's a record inversion pace through June 22nd. The 10-year, 3-month U.S. Treasury yield curve has been inverted for 154 trading days dating back to November 2022. Since 1962, the longest streak with an inverted 10-year, 3-month curve was 209 trading days ending in May 2008. To break that record, the curve would only need to stay inverted through mid-September of this year. And that source is Bespoke.
Is that a good thing to be inverted?
No.
Uh-huh.
No.
We remember 2008.
Yeah, exactly.
Inverted yields very often or most often signal a coming recession.
At the end of fiscal year 2023, federal debt is guesstimated to amount to $32.69 trillion. As of July 10th, 2023, the federal debt was at $32.48 trillion.
Sarah, say that number again. When was it at 16?
I have it in
20. Oh, I'm not ahead of you. So yeah. What was the previous number? Sorry.
So it was the guesstimated amount was is $32.69 trillion at the end of this fiscal year. As of July 10th, 2023, the federal debt was $32.48 trillion. And then in 2013, the federal debt was $16.72 trillion. And that's the U.S. government spending.
Boo-boo! USA! USA! USA!
Isn't that amazing, though? It's doubled in 10 years.
Yeah.
Servicing the debt is one of the...
How did it get that much higher with such low interest rates? It's just such a mystery to me. Oh, they were spending more money.
That will do it. Yeah. That will do it.
Yeah.
Yes. Servicing the debt is one of the federal government's biggest expenses. Net interest payments on the debt are estimated to total $395.5 billion this fiscal year, or 6.8% of all federal outlays, according to the Office of Management and Budget. That's $100 billion more than the government expects to spend on veterans' benefits and services, and more than it will spend on elementary, secondary education, disaster relief, agriculture, science, space programs, foreign aid, natural resources, and environmental protection combined. And that source is Pew Research Center.
See, nobody wants to talk about this. So what does the interest really mean anything? No, it doesn't mean anything until it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when the king is finally recognized as having no clothing, everyone says, oh, you know, they start laughing. Well, no, that old story. Because he's totally, don't say that word on the radio, naked.
Naked.
Well, just wait. When they finally realize it, it turns into, it could be a waterfall impact. Because then they all realize, oh, we do really have to really cut spending and control it. And then it becomes an issue of, oh, yeah, so some of this wanton spending that has to come back under control. It often is the situation in a declining country Ray Dalio wrote a great book about this, about the common issues we see in a declining nation. And unfortunately, these are just exactly the song that he sang, that he wrote five, six, 7 years ago in his book.
Wow.
Anyway.
It's fascinating.
Yes.
The Federal Reserve System is the single largest holder of U.S. government debt. While the Fed regularly buys and sells Treasury securities to execute monetary policy, it bought Treasuries in massive quantities during COVID-19 pandemic in an effort to keep the U.S. economy from buckling under the strain of shutdowns and quarantines. It owes almost one-fifth of the U.S. government debt, and that source is Pew Research Center.
Yeah, so those debts really do mean something, and our ability to pay them back, you know, everyone is watching in terms of their willingness to buy that debt. Whenever you're willing to fund a debt for someone or something or an entity, you always want to say, well, can they pay it back? Or will they pay the interest on it? And then when it comes due, will they be able to fund that? Well, obviously, we don't question the federal government's ability to do that. It's just at some point we question what else is going to have to come down in price to offset that excessive spending. And that's what inflation is right now, that offset. It's almost like pushing something with so much force into a box. You know that somewhere, somehow, something's got to give in that squeeze. And that's exactly what's happening there. And that's what we're talking about, you know, whether it's gold or silver or other precious metals and or other tangible assets. Some may even consider somewhat real estate as an asset that would offset that decline in our own dollar. And those assets tend to grow in response to that excessive spending. So the catch that they find themselves in is a very difficult one indeed. And our involvement, I'll just say, in Ukraine, I mean, I look at this all the time. I am a news junkie, which you probably already knew. And I support fully what we're doing there in Ukraine. But at some point, too, we're going to have to say, how much are we spending there? And or does this entirely make sense, given what it is we're trying to accomplish, amongst many other spending programs that the government is undertaking and trying to do? Some people would say the party in power is simply trying to buy votes. Whatever it is they're saying, that has to come back under some kind of control here.
The sooner that you look at problems instead of waiting until you're at a very crisis situation and you're forced into action, it would be so refreshing to see some of our leaders address some of these pressures that we're talking about, because maybe the answer would be less drastic than it will be years down the way.
But having a real conversation instead of throwing stones at those who are trying to have that real conversation by saying, okay, what do we need to do about Social Security? And I think there was a recent proposal that was floated by the Republicans. Instead of having a real conversation, what we saw was a lot of attacks that they were going to somehow close Social Security down. It's just it's such a worthless argument.
Imagine running for office and saying, if you elect me, I will cut education spending by 10% in order to write our budget. Not a good message.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I feel like the government's vision is just through a president's term and not through the future, as we're talking about interest and the compounding of it.
Yep. Yes.
Had one, actually a comment on Social Security here. If one spouse had even slightly higher income, one of the most important reasons to delay your Social Security to age 70 is to allow the lower earning spouse to collect that higher benefit when the first, most often the male, passes away. So they're saying if the male made more money, wait till you're 70 if you can.
Yes.
Because if you're likely to pass away first, that higher amount then goes to your spouse.
That's exactly what I'm attempting to do.
Okay.
Yep. Up close and personal. Yep. Because I'm the higher earning spouse in Jill and my relationship. And so my intention is that, you know, if something were to happen to me, then she would have collected a higher benefit. So, yeah, that's a great, in essence, there's a death benefit there. So it's not just the income that you're taking. It's if a spouse would also be able to collect from your benefit either. either male or female. All right? That's an even playing field there, mm-hmm. just in case you were wondering. Mm-hmm. All right. How much time do we have here, Ron?
Well, we have, I would say, about a minute to cool down, wrap up, that kind of a thing.
You bet. So the title of what we were talking about today was Do What Few Are Thinking, and we were only able to cover a part of this, but thinking differently and being able to survive the ups and downs of the market are key, in essence, to your survival in this kind of environment. And as that whoever wrote in that text, why aren't we talking about bonds? That's a great question. So thinking about those things and how you might allocate somewhat toward those areas. You know, never buy the farm, if you will, based on, you know, never purchase all assets because you think it's, or one asset rather, because you think it's unstoppable. That never happens that way. Diversification plays an incredible role in your eventual success and ability to withstand the risks and the vicissitudes of the markets.
Today's word is?
You bet. Vicissitudes.
Thank you. Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, Deanne Jennings in for Prout Financial Design's new retirement radio on WTCM Traverse City. The office number is 947-3992, or just go to proutfinancialdesign.com.
That's right.
Awesome. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Ron.